Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight we have a very long anticipated guest, because this man has been in the news, he's been in the newspaper, he's been on television, he's been, I don't think his picture is in the post office, but it might be. Tony Estrella is here. Welcome, Tony. Welcome back, I should say.
Oh, thank you for having me. Great to be back.
Tony is the artistic director of the GAM Theater, and that's why all the recent notoriety, as the GAM Theater has taken over the building on Jefferson Boulevard, and as we say in Rhode Island, that used to be the Ocean State Theater.
Right.
And GAM is moving in and preparations are underway and time is flying. So we're going to spend most of tonight talking about the history of the theater, where it was, where it is, and where it's going. And let's start off with a little bit about GAM and your background with the GAM Theater.
Yeah, well, the GAM has been 34 seasons now. It started in 1984 in Providence, and it's been in a few locations since then. We've moved around, bounced around. Of course, I was I was only 14 when the theater started, so I was on Halloween night in 1984, but I came to work with it once I graduated from the conservatory at Trinity Rep, which was back in 1995. I started the first show I did with the company was in 1996 as an actor in a Shakespeare, Antony and Cleopatra, actually. So that's kind of my involvement. The theater, of course, about halfway through its life in the late 1999-ish, was the name change to the Sandra Feinstein GAM Theater. Went from Alias Stage to that. And by that time, we were in a small, really small space, about 64 seats in Elbow Street in Providence in the Jewelry District. From there, always that space was lovely, but it was across the street from the dog pound. We used to have to ask them to can you put the dogs in early? They would do this for us on Sundays so we could have a matinee at 3 o'clock.
Right.
It was a great little space, but our landlord had a greenhouse kind of, or is his garden on the top of the building. And it actually happened, but it's ironically funny. We were doing Grapes of Wrath, a production of John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, adapted by Frank Galati. And so there we are in the Dust Bowl with no rain, and he's watering his plants, and it's leaking through the roof onto the set, you know. So it was kind of, unintentionally comic. But we needed another space after that, and this and that happened, and we moved out and ended up in the Pawtucket space where we are right now, and we'll be vacating very soon for the last 15 seasons there. And that's when I came on as artistic director with the move to Pawtucket. And that's been a wonderful home to us. Pawtucket's been a great city and a great partnership. I actually was born in Pawtucket, so it was it's been great to kind of bring art back to a place and offer some of the kind of things and opportunities that weren't necessarily there as much when I was a kid. And
that's
so
amazing. You were born in Pawtucket.
I was. Memorial Hospital, which also just closed, there's
Memorial
a lot of
Hospital used to be.
Yeah, we're more, change calls the tune we dance to, as the old saying goes. But for 15 years, it really allowed the organization, the GAM, to come into its own. I think we professionalized over that period. Was the first major move once we got to Pawtucket, which means we went from a kind of semi-professional company to kind of a full contract with Actors Equity Union, which for professional actors and stage managers, and the organization just kind of grew and grew and grew over that period of time.
I want to stop you there, because a lot of our people, I get this question a lot as I'm out and about, as I'm going to various theaters or so forth. People are always asking me about the difference between community theater and Actors Equity and professional theater. So I give my explanations, but I'm sure yours is better, so let's hear yours.
There's a lot of art out in the world and a lot of theater out in the world, and the difference essentially between professional and amateur is, one of, it's kind of almost a practical one, which means that, you know, this supply and demand of art.
Right.
It's an upside down economy, right? A lot of, you know, and what professionalism means, especially among, as far as actors are, is that you, we pay our actors a union negotiated contract. Actors Equity Association is the union, the professional union of actors and stage managers in the United States of America, which I belong to and have belonged to for a long time. So, you know, our part of our contract means we have to hire certain amounts of, you know, ratio mm-hmm. of professional actors. That means you pay professional rights and you have professional obligations to royalties when it comes to plays that you produce, et cetera. So it's a cost thing, but it also means that you're getting, that you're committing to your employees in a serious, you know, way as far as employing artists, and so that you're not only paying salaries, but benefits. You're talking health benefits and pensions, et cetera.
Even dressing room facilities.
Dressing room facilities. There's all sorts of requirements that kind of up the ante on that, and but also provides for a better, I think, environment for everybody working at the theater when you're able to do that. It doesn't necessarily mean also, I always say this too, you know, that I love the word amateur, and sometimes it's derided because amateur, from the root of it, is about, it means you do it for love. And mm-hmm. even once you're professionalized, you may belong to a union, you better still be doing it for love, right? The professionalization of the arts is good because it says to the community that arts matters, that arts jobs matter, that people actually do it for a living, you know?
Right.
We don't, you know, and that they care, and that usually means people who really pursue a professional career in the arts, it means they've usually got the education and the training that they've invested, you know, not only a lot of time, but a lot of financial resources often in the investment into that education. And then they've really put the time in. You know, the other thing that we do, if you're not yet a union member, you also can get points towards your union card, you know, which is like the apprentice model, which is in so many professions, which has been in the actor's profession, it's in the plumber's profession, it's in, you know, it's a guild, right? And it's a great way of continuing on that. So passing that tradition down, you know.
Right.
So we're very proud that we've been able to do that, you know, as Trinity Rep does, as Ocean State was doing, that, you know, we're not only kind of making what I think is great art and providing for our communities, but we're also providing real jobs and you know, proving that and saying that art matters, that this is a way that people actually make a life in contributing to their communities, and that these are important jobs for us and they're not just kind of volunteer positions, you know.
Right. And people sometimes mistake the fact that you might be appearing in something. For example, last year I appeared at Theater by the Sea in Music Man, and everybody said, "Oh, did you have to get your Equity card?" And I said, "No, that's a little bit different.
Right.
You can have a certain amount, and there's a percentage of the show can allow for people like me that may be in one show, but not in a, absolutely.
And there's a ratio, and it also builds up. If you wanted to be someday, that was something that you decided, you know what, this radio thing and this thing I don't want to do any. I want to become an actor.
No, your job is way too hard compared to mine.
You know, that you can pursue that, and you have a foot in the door that way. Yeah, and so we have a balance of that as well. But I love the fact, you know, it's great that, you know, you get to work with, because even before you may not have your Equity card yet, but if you're going to get up on stage in front of an audience, you better know what you're doing, and you better be able to do it well, no matter what your union affiliation is or may not be, right?
Right. People are paying for it. They want to see the best.
And they don't care. They're not going to look in your pocket to see what cards you carry.
That's,
you know?
That's absolutely correct. You could have someone, you know, as new as Fred Sullivan.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the other things that you have as an Equity house, if you will, is limited. I think we've mentioned everybody in the state that has that.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, it's just...
PPAC, of course, will have it as...
PPAC, they come in, and the road shows come in, and those are professional shows. I think almost all of them are. And, you know, Trinity Rep, obviously, is the big one, the big dog, and us, and Theater by the Sea.
Right. Yeah. So here we go now to last Sunday. There was a what I thought was a very nice article in the paper, in the Sunday Journal, and your picture right in the center of all the construction that's going on.
Right. Yeah.
And I've lived through construction in that building once before.
Sure.
When Ocean State first moved in, and now it's exciting to see that things are continuing, although change sometimes is a little bit hard for some people.
Sure.
Because they get concerned and, oh, it's not going to be the same.
It won't be.
But also change is very good. So let's take a moment, if you will, maybe a couple minutes here to describe the timetable not necessarily the physical layout, because I'd like to do that in the next segment, mm-hmm. but the timetable for what's going on at the building on Jefferson Boulevard.
Yeah, renovations are happening right now, and we were, you know, our goal was to open the season. I think September 20th is the date we have. But right now, what we're looking at, and this is actually fresh off the printing presses, so this may be the first your audiences. Yeah, will be the first to know. But that is going to get pushed back a few weeks. We're looking now at the date, and this is all going to be official very soon, of starting the season, opening Night of the Iguana on October 11th.
Okay.
So there's a slight calendar change just because, you know, renovations are what they are, and they're going very, very, very well. But as you well know, you said you've been through it once in the building already. You know, it's like with a house, you know what I mean? You go in and you go, oh, wait a minute, didn't know that. Now we got to do that as well, you know, and that wasn't part of the initial plan, and it's just the way things happen. But they're going really well, and I'm actually heading over there right after this to check up on what's going on, and they've every time I get pictures every day, and I try to get over there as much as possible too, because it's just the energy in the building is great, and so it's so exciting. So that's when we're gonna start up, and we're gonna, you know, our first we're still in Pawtucket right now. We have a summer program going on there, our Shakespeare intensive for students, and they're actually going to be performing July 19th through the 22nd, two plays. They're doing Macbeth and Midsummer Night's Dream. High school students, amazing.
Okay, back up on that a minute because people might be interested in that.
Yeah.
So that's July 19th it's starting?
Yeah, through the 22nd. It's one weekend.
In Pawtucket
at the space that we're currently occupying over on Exchange Street. It's called GSI, which is GAM Summer Intensive, and they do this incredible program. Our education department, which is small but mighty, gets about 25 high school students, and they perform. They have a four-week camp. And they do over that period, they rehearse two more or less full length Shakespeare plays. They're cut down, but they're not like they're a full night of theater. They're like an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And they do two, and they're doing Macbeth and Midsummer, a great tragedy and a great comedy. So you get everything, and it's incredible. They do it on our stage, so they have the resources. They have, you know, a space and a set and lights and costumes, and it's an incredible the work the kids do, how seriously they take it. It's a real delight, a summer delight that I've been able to enjoy as an audience member for many years now, and I'm looking forward to the performances this summer. So that's what we're doing there, and then we'll be kind of vacating that space at the end of August and moving in September and getting ready to open.
The phone number is going to stay the same, which is
401-723-4266 or 723-GAM.
723-GAM, G-A-M-M. And one other question that I've had, I don't know that I've ever asked you this before when we've met, but GAM, is that an abbreviation, or is that just someone's name?
The kind of proper name of the theater, I suppose, is the Sandra Feinstein GAM Theater. And that was what I mentioned earlier, the name change that happened from Alias Stage, and that was based on a gift from Alan Sean Feinstein in memory of his sister, Sandra, who was a music teacher and worked
so
in the theater.
So her last name was GAM.
GAM, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
right,
so just in the parlance, as you know, my proper name is Anthony. No one, not even my family, calls me that. Tony. He's not even usually it's to gets to down to tone, because he can't, you know, we're so lazy we can't even say two syllables, so the shorthand for us is, and the way everyone knows us is the GAM.
Right.
Yeah, it's easy.
All
one
right.
Syllable.
Well, we will we'll have a little bit of mood music for a moment, and then we'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more of Tony Estrella, the artistic director of the GAM Theater, and we'll find out a little bit about what's happening to the physical layout of the building when we return.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, having a very pleasant evening sitting and talking with Tony Estrella. Tony is the artistic director of the GAM Theater. They are moving from beautiful downtown Pawtucket to beautiful downtown Warwick. Well, actually, it's not downtown Warwick. Yeah, it's on Jefferson Boulevard. For those of you that are familiar with the area, it's, as they used to say on the Ocean State commercials, a stone's throw from the airport, far at all, on the end of Jefferson Boulevard down by the Greenwood Inn. We promised we would talk about the layout and the physical structure of what's happening there. Before we do that, I would like to tell people to go to the website, which is
www.gamtheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E.
Theater with an R-E, just the way Ocean State was, and Theater by the Sea is, and so forth. So R-E, Rhode Island people should get used to that. And when you go to the website, you'll have a great opportunity to see some of the artist concepts of what might be happening. I'm sure they won't look exactly like that, but it gives you a great idea of what's going on and some of the changes, some of the people that are involved with those changes as well. So let's go. We used to have, I believe it was 407 seats, if my memory serves correctly.
Right. Yep.
And that's not the case anymore.
No. One of the things that was important, you know, for us and was so kind of integral to our mission, vision, and the kind of work we do is space and is the dynamic between the actors and the audience. And those of your audience who've been down and seen us in Pawtucket, it's 135 seats we have in there, you know. And so, you know, you're even if you're in the back row of the theater, you're still within literally within spitting distance of the actors.
Even closer than a stone's throw.
Yeah. and I say spitting distance, I mean it because I will apologize for having probably sprayed most of our audience over the many, many years. But that's the kind of theater that we do. I think we've come to be known for and appreciated. And I think our audience expects it and really hopes for it. And it's certainly something that we have to continue as we move forward. You know, intimacy, one of the calling cards that I think kind of made the GAM what it is today is, I like to say that we do kind of epic theater in an intimate space. And so not being afraid of big plays, you know, whether it be Shakespeare or Brecht or even contemporary plays that kind of take on, you know, that are sprawling and epic in their production, and that we will kind of fit them, you know, I won't say shoehorn, because I think somehow our limitations have become kind of boundless, or we use our limitations to our advantage. But we need it to grow, certainly, but we don't want to do past that experience, that we still need to have an experience in the new space in Warwick that allows the audience to feel the same way, but more comfortable for the artist and for the audience. So we're going to have about 175 seats approximately in there. And for those of your audience who've been to the Ocean State space before, know that in its 400 seat presentation was a proscenium arch and with two banks of seats, basically. One bank of 100 in the front, followed by a crossover, and then behind that, about 300 more seats that went up to the back.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're expanding the stage, pulling the proscenium arch out, so that's a false proscenium, so this opens the space up, and then expanding that stage out over that first bank of seats, more or less, so that the stage is about 22 more feet or so of depth, and then we'll curtain off that back
about
area.
The same level that people are used to walking in on.
Absolutely, yeah. Same thing. No stairs, anything like that. Come right in, but you won't see in the when we're using it for a GAM production, you won't see that 300 bank of seats. That will be curtained off.
Right.
So we're in effect creating a big black box that will then have portable risers, meaning where the audience sits, that will set up the riser formation for the stadium seating for the...
Depending on the production, whether it wants to be straight on or theater in the
It'll be more or less, it'll be akin to what you're used to now coming to Pawtucket. We may change now and again when it's appropriate and when it works, as we do now. Usually once a year, we do something a little tricky, you know, we just did for As You Like It, which was great. So it'll be that same kind of experience. The great change will be, of course, for our audience, will be that you know, some of the limitations in Pawtucket were that, you know, if you were late for the show, there's only one way in and out, really. I mean, one way for the audience. There's other ways in and out of the space for egress. But as far as where you came in for the audience, you basically had to walk across the stage to get to your seat. If you had to go to the bathroom in the middle of the show and you couldn't hold it, you had to walk across the stage. And so not only are you embarrassed by that, but the actors are like trying, you know, other, you're in the way of the audience. And so sometimes the charms kind of overlap with some of the disadvantages. Those will be removed. We'll have more access to that. It'll be easier to get in and out of the space. We'll also have a lot more height. You know, we'll be able to do a set with two floors on it if we wanted to, which was a little difficult. We could do about a floor and a half in Pawtucket. And there'll just be more room for the actors to get around. You know, for instance, in Pawtucket, it was charming, but you know, trying to get from one part of the stage to the other. You know, we did As You Like It, which is the last show we just closed, the Shakespeare. We split the audience to kind of an alley. We had two sides with the stage in the center. But that went right to the walls, the very walls of the theater. There was no way, if we needed to cross around to make an exit from an entrance from the other side of the stage, you went outside the building and came back in, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how that goes.
So yeah, we've all done that, you know. So this is going to allow just for a lot, you know, the same, I think powerful dynamic between actor and audience. It also allowed for two flexible spaces within the space. So there's the GAM space, which I was just describing, right? When you come to see a GAM play, that's what you're going to do. But the space is also will be available for other groups to use for rental, etc. It could be anything from an orchestra to a dance to another theater show to you know, the mayor's inauguration, chorus, you know, the chorus, all sorts of things, because we pull that curtain back and you've got 300 seats and an expanded stage that you could fit anything you wanted to on. So now we've got essentially the GAM space and then another 300 seat, very auditorium-like space that you could be, you know, kind of put on any presentation you really
like
wanted to.
Like a barbershop quartet.
Anything, yeah. It could be, you know, scaled up and down. And that gives, and that 300 seats or so, plus a little, plus or minus a few, has always been identified as the kind of space, you know, necessary or attractive to smaller arts groups in particular. You know, a lot of times, you know, you think, well, we want to put on this orchestra piece and we could go to Vets, but it's 2,000 seats or whatever that is, you know what I mean? It's
like 3,000 seats.
Yeah, you know, and so that's a lot to fill and a lot of space to cover and a lot of ground. And this will offer a more, you know, sizable but more intimate experience for those groups as well.
All right. So the as far as what I call the creature comforts, when I talk about theaters in Rhode Island, I know that that's also going to change from the moment you park your car, which would be a whole lot easier than what you used to in Pawtucket, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Which is parking lots. The parking lot actually surrounds the building.
Yeah.
And so you have very easy and free parking.
Free parking,
unless you're
easy
out there
access.
With a bucket. No.
No buckets. Okay. You get free parking. Absolutely.
Free parking. Yeah. And then when you get inside the building, a spacious lobby compared to some other places.
Absolutely.
And there'll be concessions available now.
Concessions available. If you're familiar with the space, the one change in the lobby will be that the box office will be in the lobby proper rather than you used to go in and take
on
a left by
the
bathrooms.
The room,
just right there when you come in, we've got a window right there near concessions. So that'll be a little bit more contained, which I think hopefully will be it's always the way that, you know, it has been at the GAM. We've thought, oh, that would be great, you know, just kind of like, let's get all kind of together here in that space to keep it a little bit more intimate in there. But yeah, there's lots of space in the lobby, which is another space for people to come in, and that can be, there's a rental space as well for groups. It's a, you know, it's got that mini stage over in the corner, which is nice.
Which,
and
where the cabaret used to be, for those of you that are familiar with that. So that space is going to basically stay the same?
Other than the box office will change.
Which was a closet before.
The box office will change, and the, you know, concession will probably look a bit different, but the area will be more or less used the same. There will be some, paint and this and that going on in there as well.
Right. So that little mini stage in the corner is where you'll come out after every show and do a little cabaret.
That's right. Yeah. You know, you don't want me to do the cabaret. We have many people who are qualified to do so. I am not. I could MC the cabaret. Maybe that would be about as far as you'd want me to go with that.
Oh, so. You have a few people in your group over the years that would probably be pretty good at that.
Oh, too. Yeah. No question.
Tom Glatto.
Could
do it very well.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom. He's a master of ceremonies. And
yes, he is.
Currently.
Yes, he is. Okay, so we've talked about you parking the car, you're walking in the door, you're getting your tickets, you're having a beverage. What kind of beverages might be available?
Well, there'll be, I'm not quite sure other than to say there will be, you know, both soft and at least semi-hard liquors. I don't know, beer and wine certainly, and there might be
That hasn't changed
at all.
So
either. Yeah, there'll be
I didn't know if it was a licensing clothing thing or something like that.
No,
but
no,
people
no.
that enjoy that want to make sure that's still available.
Absolutely.
And then also, it's air conditioned, very comfortable,
yes,
nice building.
Yeah.
Appropriate size men's and ladies' rooms.
So that's the huge, you know, I mean, that's the, you know, one other thing in that when you have a small and only a couple of stalls there, you know, your intermissions are longer, your mm-hmm. beforehand, you know, it's just, it's going to be, yeah, you know, people walk right in and go right to the bathroom and go, look at that. I've never been so happy in my life. There are five stalls or whatever it is, you know, so it will definitely be a more comfortable experience for everybody. Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the theater, whether it's a normal GAM production where you walk right in at ground level and you're right there at the stage, at the seating. And if it's for some reason you're going there for a larger performance and you have the stadium seating available, they'll just walk in the door, turn right or left, depending which door they come in, and go up the stairs or up slightly to whatever seat or row they're in.
Yeah.
So that's all great. So I think we've given everybody a pretty good picture or image, if they're familiar at all with the facility, of what it used to be, that the real change is that the seats down that you would take a step down to as you entered the theater are now gone, and that's going to be the actual stage level.
Be stage level, right.
So we've got all that figured out. Yeah. And then we've got just a couple more minutes in this segment, and we talked earlier about actors' equity.
Yeah.
There's some good news for actors behind what the people don't see, right? They have dressing
rooms. Yeah, sure. There's going to be that's another thing, you know, and, you know, all small theaters are and small arts organizations are like this. You get a space, you find a space that you can actually put on a play, meaning it doesn't have, you know, columns in the middle of the space and you could actually see a distance, you know, and then you're like, okay, then you set your stage up and then you go, well, now where are we going to dress? How are we going to get around? And so that can tend to be a makeshift experience. What the new space will offer us is more room to kind of make that, a more comfortable experience for the actors and, you know, more room to breathe for them as well as for the audience. So
a lot of people didn't realize, because normally they would come in, they'd sit in the seat, they watch the show, they go home.
Yeah.
But there's three levels available at Ocean State.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of room in there for, you know, for other things that we're doing as well, which is education and classes and rehearsals.
And your offices will be
and
there.
And offices will be there. Everything will be contained within that building.
Everything is in that building.
Yeah.
And a workshop.
Yes, absolutely. And then because they have space for building, you know, a proper space for building, in which, again, for many small arts organizations, that's, you know, you worry about the space first and you figure out everything else as you go along. So everything else has more of a makeshift feel to it. This has proper space in order to do that, which will be, a godsend for us. So,
excellent. All right. We'll take a short break again. And when we come back, we'll talk about some of the shows coming up at the GAM Theater. Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Tony Estrella from the GAM Theater. He is the artistic director and a very, very busy man right now, as they're making plans to move from Pawtucket very shortly to beautiful downtown Warwick in the former Ocean State Theater building on Jefferson Boulevard. And we talked in the first segment about a little bit of the history of the theater and what it does, and then we talked in the second segment about the new layout and the new availability of seating and how that's all going to work. And one of the things that I didn't ask you in that last segment, Tony, as we are about to preview the five events coming up for the new season, that I noticed none of those events are big time musical theater things.
No, they're not. Well, you know, anyone who knows that the work that we do is big time musicals have not been a big part of it. We were joking earlier about that me not doing the cabaret, and when people say, why don't you do musicals? And I usually say, well, because I can't sing. and you don't want to.
Well, that's not true.
But that's not,
some degree.
So the each of us as a arts organizations has a mission and the kind of work that we do and how we're identified. And so even though we're moving into a space that, so wonderfully was housing kind of big musicals and we're going to transform it to kind of be able to do the kind of work that we do, which is different. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that somewhere, not in this first season, we're not programming one, but that you know, one of the reasons people would often ask in Pawtucket, are you guys ever going to do a musical, and or that you would never do musicals if this was some kind of hard and fast rule? And there is no hard and fast rule. Of course, one of the limitations that we will not have anymore is the spatial limitation of sometimes right. musicals require a little bit more room than we had in
and more seats usually to pay the bill.
Yeah, right. And so there are many musicals which would certainly fit under the umbrella within the kind of vision and mission of the kind mm-hmm. of work we do. You know, you probably will never see something in the lines of, say, you know, a family musical like you know, Annie or something like that. Right. Wouldn't be kind of within the province of the kind of work that we do. Right. But there are a lot of musicals out there that would be and yeah. that I love dearly, and that I hope that someday that we could maybe fit in. I'm not going to give anything away now, but
there's a gleam in his eye, though.
Yeah, there's a couple, and that I would be excited to be able to do. So you know, we'll see. But as we moved in there, it was important that we kind of made sure that we picked a season that we're kind of going to kind of give you a peek into now, that you know, said to audiences, this is who we are and the kind of work that we do, because we're going to, you know, we'll be bringing our audience with us that's been with us, and then hopefully expanding into people who haven't tried us before, and we want them to kind of, we're going to play to our strengths.
Absolutely. That's going to start off initially, if you missed the last segment. We talked about a little bit of a change.
Sure.
As far as a September start is actually going to be an October start.
Yeah,
now.
October 11th.
Night of the Iguana.
Night of the Iguana, yeah.
It's a big opening.
It's a big, yeah. Tennessee Williams, you know, who's the greatest of the great American playwrights, I think. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we actually, the last time I was here, we talked about, we opened our season with Streetcar Named Desire,
right.
Which was, you know, it turned out to be probably the most successful show in the history of the theater. I think, you know, in terms of numbers of people coming, and also, you know, more importantly, it was as kind of artistically, I think, assured and excellent as certainly anything we've done. And
Tony, you're probably forgetting the fact that it was probably because of the radio show that it was the most successful.
Absolutely, which is why I'm so happy to be back here for our next Tennessee Williams incarnation. So if you listened to the show a couple of years ago and said, I got to go see that, I hope you'll do the same for Night of the Iguana. And Iguana, you know, among Tennessee's work is, you know, up there, you've got Streetcar, of course, and Glass Menagerie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And I would say that, you know, Iguana probably fits as the Mount Rushmore, if you will, of his work. But Iguana is probably done less frequently than any of those other three. So that's also exciting, because I think some people will know it from the movie with Richard Burton from 1964, which is lovely. But the play is something else entirely. And,
are you going to be the Richard Burton role?
I am going to be the Richard Burton role. I won't be doing Richard, you know.
You look alike.
So. I wish. I wish that voice is what I really wish I had. He's amazing in the film, it's, you know, it seems like a really great play to kind of be doing now, you know, to start the kind of just an overview of the season is, you know, they're all stories of, you know, how do we as families, as people, as individuals, as communities respond in crisis, you know, when we feel the world kind of encroaching on us. And I think, you know, with the news being what it is, et cetera, you know, that a lot of people feel like these are anxious times.
Yeah.
And so how do we respond in anxious times? How do we get through? How do we endure? How do we resist? These are the stories that we're going to be telling this year. And this one starts with, you know, this kind of existential crisis of this defrocked Reverend T. Lawrence Shannon, who's now conducting tours of, you know, Baptist ladies to the rainforest area, the kind of jungle of Mexico, where a friend operates a ramshackle, quote unquote, resort. And he's not supposed to take them there. They're supposed to go to much nicer places, but he's having a bit of a hard time and needs to cool out. So he takes them there and as a way to retreat from his own demons and the world's and the people he meets there. It's wonderful because it's set in 1940 during World War II, and in Europe, and the Blitz is happening at the time. And there's a German family at the resort, and they're listening to the Luftwaffe bombing London, and they're happy about about it. And so all of the world is kind of crumbling around him. While, and it's a story about no matter how far we run away from things, they tend to, they were always right there. Right. And that we have to contend with them no matter how much we don't want to. And it's a beautiful story about desire and the complexities of desire, which is another story I think we need to be talking about right now in terms of how we're dealing with these issues in our community. And so it's great poetry. It's the great poetic literature of the stage for the American theater and from our greatest poet. So I think it's going to be a kind of wonderful way, I hope, to kind of, you know, for those of us who, those the audiences who have been with us for the past 15 years, kind of go, yes, this is what the GAM does. And for audiences who may not have been able to experience that yet, can come in and see something that they may have a little familiarity with, but hopefully will be knocked out by the power and want to come back.
Excellent. And then after that, a show I'm not particularly familiar with,
yeah,
called Gloria.
Gloria. It's a terrific, you know, we go from Tennessee, who is, you know, the kind of poet laureate of the American theater and maybe the greatest ever classic kind of, American author, and to this, I don't know if in 50 years we may be talking about Brandon Jacobs Jenkins in the same way. Audiences who go to Trinity Rep and may have seen Appropriate two seasons ago over there was a wonderful production of one of his plays. This play Gloria hasn't been done in the area. It's fairly new. It was in New York only a season and a half ago or so. It takes place in a publishing office for the most part, in the first half of the play anyway. And there are things that happen in the play that I cannot talk about. Spoiler alert. Cannot say, right, because you're going to be, all I can say is that it's a knockout, and it's as surprising and as shocking and moving a play. It's also starts as a workplace comedy, so it's also a funny play, but it's really about, again, kind of following that theme that I was talking about with Iguana, that what do we do in crisis? And there's a massive kind of crisis that hits this this workplace, and it's more about how we connect with each other in a world in which we're so easy to distance ourselves via the digital world, via kind of our own individual kind of ambitions, that we're not kind of, we often work in places where we're surrounded. We've got 20 people that we work with, and we know so little about them beyond maybe what their, their Facebook feed tells us about them. We don't know, what's their middle name? How we're losing connections as humans and what the cost of that is. It's one of the great kind of recent American plays, I'd say, over the past 10 years, and certainly the most galvanizing, and one that I promise the audience. And again, I'm sorry to be cryptic about it,
that's,
but you don't want me to give anything away about this one, and I'm going to beg people who write about it to do the same, so that that firsthand experience can be that powerful firsthand experience can be experienced by our audience.
Excellent. And then you go to a U.S. premiere, so
yeah,
obviously not a lot of people know about this one.
No, they may, though, because it's from a famous British author, Sarah Waters, who wrote, is one of my favorite novelists and has been for many, many years. She wrote Tipping the Velvet, which was her first novel, has been made by the BBC into a film. She wrote The Little Stranger, which is coming out this fall in a major Hollywood production. She wrote Fingersmith, which was actually up at ART, a stage adaptation of this was up at ART last year, which is set in Victorian London and is this crazy kind of Dickensian like mystery. This is a one of her bigger novels called The Night Watch, and it's been adapted by a British playwright named Hallie Flanagan, and it's only been done in London. And we actually tried to get it a couple seasons ago, but they were angling for a New York production, so that the rights weren't available. And when that didn't happen, we were able to get it, and it's a United States premiere, so it'll be the first time anybody sees it here. It's also set in the 40s. It goes backwards in time, 1947, 1944, 1941. It's set, the latter part is set during the Second Blitz, which is also, we're going to try to connect it with some of the same sound stuff that we do for the Night of the Iguana. It's a beautiful story about resistance. It's a love story and a resistance story about survival and how to cope with real catastrophe and real crisis, and seen through the eyes of protagonist Kay, who is an ambulance driver and on the night watch, basically, who in the third shift is during the Blitz is out there pulling bodies out of rubble, and what that does to her and her sense of humanity, which is extraordinary, and her love. Sarah is a gay writer, and she in her in her first novels, she, you know, people often compared them. They were Dickens seen through kind of a gay female lens, which is really interesting to look at that period and those tropes that we're so familiar with from a different angle. And then she moved up in time and looking at the war period. But an extraordinary writer of great depth of humanity and a very, very moving story that I think people are going to be knocked out by.
Okay, we go from there to a New England premiere,
yeah,
which is Escaped Alone.
Yeah, by Carol Churchill, who is, you know, along with Tom Stoppard, I would say the greatest probably living playwrights. Carol is, she's been around for forever, and you know, her more famous plays, which we've produced in the past, Top Girls is one of them, and Cloud Nine, which Trinity did a wonderful production of several years back. This is her newest play, and it's unique in that it's a play that whose characters are four women. You might, you know, the euphemism would be of a certain age. She says in the thing that they are all at least 70, which is you never see on stage. It's wonderful, and we've got a great group of actors coming in to do this. And it's a play about tea in the backyard. It's three friends who gather kind of frequently to just sit and chat, and then the neighbor who they invite over to join them in that. And their chat goes from kind of domestic banalities to what's happening in the world around them and how things are changing too fast and all the things that we kind of talk about. And then it's punctuated with this look into the neighbor has these monologues about what's actually around the corner for us ecologically and the kind of looming kind of terror of what's happening in our world and how that connects to the banalities of just being alive. It's a very, very daring piece, though. It's very funny and alive. There's music in it. The women stop at one section of the scene as they just sing together, kind of they harmonize on the Duran Ron. And so it's both a celebration of life and a kind of their lives and a confrontation with the kind of ineffable of what's right around the corner for us, you know, in terms of, you know, some of these anxieties I have been talking about that we're currently experiencing, be they political, social, environmental, certainly, which is something that we're not dealing with very, very well. That's going to be paired with, so that's a long one-act play, but it's going to be paired with a short play by Samuel Beckett, the great writer of Waiting for Godot and Endgame, a play of his called Come and Go, which is a short, probably nobody out listening, very few of your listeners will know. If they do, they're going to be very excited because they'll love it. If you know it, you'd love it. It's a very short play about three old friends, old women, who are just on like basically on a park bench, and they're also talking. So it's almost the same setup. Even one of the characters actually shares the same name. So I think Carol Churchill's paying a bit of homage to Samuel, in which they kind of in an oblique way talk about their connection over their entire lives. And so those two plays are going to kind of dovetail together to hopefully show the endurance of friendship and intimacy, even when things may seem to be swirling around you out of control.
All right. And then we're in April and May, and we're to the last production of the season, True West.
Yeah, Sam Shepard, you know, who just passed away this last year and is one of the great, great American playwrights of contemporary American playwrights, you know, is the author of Buried Child and True West are probably his most famous plays. He also was a great actor. You know, most people would know him from The Right Stuff. He was Oscar nominated actor. Bloodline, he was just on TV before he passed. Sam Shepard was like Clint Eastwood, where there was a, you know, they would say we need a Sam Shepard type, and when he was around, they would just hire Sam Shepard. Cowboy, incredible artist, actor, and a lot of people who know him from the movies won't know that he was one of the great American playwrights. You know, in that generation after Tennessee Williams, you know, along with David Mamet, and True West is a great story set in the early '80s. The two brothers, who seemingly opposites, one who lives in the desert and fights pit bulls. And then comes and the other, who's a screenwriter, a successful screenwriter, who is looking after his mother's house, and they're in Southern California. Their mother has gone to on a trip to Alaska, and then the brother shows up, the kind of the desert dwelling brother shows up, and he's a thief, but it's a kind of Cain and Abel story, in which Cain and Abel, though seemingly to be on opposite ends of the spectrum, are actually much closer than you think. So it becomes this great story of, I think, America. To particularly America right now, kind of the birth of the it's also about the movies and how we then represent that in entertainment. So I think it has it's a particularly good time to revive this play right now.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us with a great idea of what's coming up for the GAM Theater for the new season, and season 34,
yeah,
which will run starting in October, running through May.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, I look forward to you coming back much more frequently now that you're in our area.
Yes.
And look forward to talking maybe, you know, each show as they come along. We can get a little capsule of what's going on, talk to some of the actors involved, and we'll try to work all that out. I wish you all the best, and I would like our audience to take this opportunity to go to the website. And there's a way you can donate on there. This is a nonprofit organization we're talking about, trying to make ends meet, going into a big move. So a lot of us should take the opportunity to go to the website and see what we can do to help out. And September 6th, there's going to be an open house, hopefully, that, you know, still construction is still going on.
Yeah, you get a sneak peek. There'll be food trucks will be in the parking lot over at the new space at 1245 Jefferson Boulevard. And it'll be kind of just a get to know us and welcome to Warwick evening. Hopefully get a sneak peek of what's happening in the theater. You know, it'll still be under some construction at the time, but maybe we can have a hard hat tour, open some doors, and we can peek in and give you a little bit of a preview on what's to come.
So here's a thought. Now, a lot of our listeners, I know this happens to me on occasion, not very often, but I'll go out to dinner and it's a nice restaurant and I spend, you know, maybe $150, $200, whatever it is. So here's an opportunity. Pretend you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And go to the Jefferson Boulevard location on September 6th. Buy a hot dog from the food truck and give the rest of the money to the theater.
How about that? That's a great thought.
See, there you go. Yeah. You'll enjoy yourself. You'll feel good for doing it, and you'll be helping out a great cause.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks again for coming in.
Thank you, Mike.
The rest of you, we'll see you next time on Conducting Conversations. Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.